give the announcement.
I'm not going to.
Okay.
It's late.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We are one of about two dozen lodges around the world. We are here to spread, broadcast the teachings of Theosophy, universal brotherhood being the keynote of all our endeavors. So we have two meetings a week. We have one on Sunday morning from 11 to 12. The doors open at 10:30. And we have a meeting at on Wednesday evenings. We're studying The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. And that is from 7:30 to 8:30. Prior to that, from 5:15 to 7:15, we have a library in the front of the building, and we have a reference for the class, and we have a student there, a librarian, who will direct you to any questions you may have about the library and its resources. So, we'd like to read the declaration, start the year out reading the declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or the inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists for the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all those who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So everything here is done on a voluntary basis of time, service, and money. everything is voluntary, of course. It's all free will offerings. We don't pass a basket, but you know, we are self-supporting through contributions. So, but nothing is imposed or implied in that area. And the least amount given in the right spirit is fine. It's like the widow's mite. It's the intent carries a long way. So we have the new program for the 3 months, the new periodical, January, February, and March of 2018 up here and at the book table, or the usher's table, rather. So for every month, we have an overall topic, an overall umbrella topic. And for this month, it's Tools for Spiritual Evolution. And today's class is The Power of Will and Desire. So behind will stands desire. We will discuss will first, and then desire, and then how they're interrelated. Here's a quote from HPB from the magazine Lucifer. Will is the offspring of the divine, the God in man. Desire, the motive power of the animal life. So most men live in and by desire, and they mistake it for will. But that's because we have gotten so confused with our multiplicity of desires that and it's also through the overstimulation of desire, which is in the modern world in the media and advertising and the newspapers and movies and just our educational system, how we're trained. It's one of competitiveness. It's one of satisfying one's own desires. But that is not the higher desire. So he who would achieve must separate will from desire and make his will the ruler. For desire is unstable and ever-changing, while will is steady and constant. So will is this definition of will. And there's various kinds of will too, that are it's a colorless, it pervades all the principles. It's not per se a principle of its own, because it's not a human principle. It's throughout all nature. There's will everywhere, in the lower kingdoms. Everything has the ability to choose or reject what it wants, or to seek for and to reject what it wants. So will is an intelligent force, and it gives to and enacts, it helps enact in nature its laws. So there are three pairs to consider when considering will. That is, the first pair is feeling and emotion, the second, will or volition, and the third is thought or mind. And in Manus, as with the external or manifested universe. So the word faith ought to be translated as will. Faith without will is like a windmill without wind, barren of results. So thinking of oneself as this, that, or the other is the chief factor in the production of every kind of psychic or even physical phenomenon. So we need to will it in order to become it. We need to see it clearly and distinctly in order to motivate our desires for the accomplishment of the will. Now, doubt stays the will and kills action. And we wanted to mention, too, in the Secret Doctrine is the only place we could find that there are six types of saktis or powers, which are will. They're all manifestations of will. And we just like to go through them quickly. Parasakti is the supreme force or power, and includes the powers of light and heat. Nanasakti or Yanasakti is the power of intelligent, real wisdom or knowledge. So we have, this is divided into this intelligent, real wisdom or knowledge is mind interpreting sensations, memory recalling past ideas, raising future expectation, and it connects ideas to the mysterious links of memory. And also, one of these powers is the manifestations of clairvoyance and psychometry when it is liberated from the bonds of matter. The third is Ichasakti, the power of the will, it generates certain nerve currents which set in motion such muscles for the accomplishment of the desired object. Kriya Shakti is the mysterious power of thought. The energy inherent in it produces phenomenal results. Intense volition will produce the desired result. Kundalini Shakti, which is as well known in kind of New Age circles and yoga, it is universal light. It works like and has a serpentine motion to it. It is the principle manifesting everywhere in nature, and includes attraction and impulsion, electricity and magnetism are manifestations of it. And lastly is Mantrika Shakti, which is the force or power of letters, speech, or music. Melody is one of its ordinary manifestations. The six forces in their unity represent the seventh, which is the light of the Logos being the manifested deity or the effect of the ever-concealed cause. So we are warned, I mean, these are powers, but we are warned throughout the readings to understand what they are and to work on our moral and ethical and altruistic side, because to attempt to master these powers without spiritual knowledge and wisdom and enlightenment would be disastrous. We just wanted to touch on what will is, basically, and the types of will there are. And now we will hear about the desire principle, which is behind will.
So we'll start off our piece of it with a definition of desire. And it is something to long for, to wish for earnestly, or to covet. So it can be a verb, of course, or a noun. And the topic for the month is the inner tools for spiritual evolution. And we're starting off with will and desire. And we kind of wondered, what does will and desire have to do with as a tool for evolution? And after really thinking about it, we came to the conclusion that yes, these are the main tools for spiritual evolution. They're like the foundation, because if we don't have the correct desire, then the will is not going to function in the proper manner. Because with will and desire, if the desire is weak, then the action, which is will not function. So if we're looking at a spiritual type of evolution then as a tool, it's not going to be there to help push us forward in our desire, in our longing for a spiritual life. So just as a background, we know that man is a sevenfold being. We have seven principles, and desire is one of those. We have the physical principle. We have the astral, we have prana, and then number four, right in the middle, we have desire, or the kama principle, and then we have mind, or manas, buddhi, and then atma. So the desire principle then is that connection between, it is an imperative connection between the higher triad, which is permanent and evolves, doesn't evolve, but it reincarnates from life to life. And then it's the connection with the lower principles, which are transient. And it is desire that helps us to connect with mind in order to learn the lessons that come our way. And we'll be mentioning duty shortly. And it is the desire principle that forms with the astral after death. And it is involved with the after-death states as well. So we did want to read from the Ocean of Theosophy a quote. It is desire and passion which caused us to be born and will bring us to birth again and again in some body on this earth or another globe. So just right there, it's talking about will bring us to birth again and again. So we know that this desire principle, depending upon how we color it, will determine the type of future life that we will have. It is by passion and desire we are made to evolve through the mansions of death called lives on earth. It was by the arising of desire in the unknown first cause, the one absolute existence, that the whole collection of worlds are manifested, and by means of the influence of desire in the now manifested world is the latter kept in existence. So we see then that desire is not only an earthly idea. It's also cosmic. It is what brings forth the whole of manifestation. There's a saying that we hear frequently, desire first arose in it. And although the deific essence does not manifest, manifestation proceeds from it. And at that point, with the first logos, the first thrill of manifestation, that is when desire will then sort of take up residence then and perpetuate will throughout, you know, the Manvantara then. So in regards to how desire, because it, as was said, behind will stands desire, and that means that how desire goes, so does will. So we can color will, we color desire, which then affects will, with our motives. And if it's the basis for action. And depending upon what our motive is, that will determine the whole of our evolution. And one thing that's interesting is that desire is not produced by the body, but desire is, the body does not produce desire. Desire produces the body. There we go. And it, in such a way that depending upon our motive and how we act based upon the motive with desire and then will acting because of what how desire will motivate it, then we we are then making the karmic impressions for the next life or lives that will come. So it's our determination, it's our free will based upon how desire acts that will determine how our future manifestations will proceed. And desire, in regards to motive and choice, can be used for good or for evil. And we certainly see that, you know, just watching the news, reading the newspaper, we can see how materialism, which was mentioned in the first talk, can affect the desires that we have, influencing our choices. And then I know we keep repeating, but then once those choices are made, then will goes in and causes those actions. And desire even affects the imagination. And if desire is weak, we need desire. There are different levels of desire. There is that lower material one that is focused on things rather than spirit. So then there's that higher idea of desire of spirit and making those choices, not for only your own good, but for the good of all, for helping to raise up the lower kingdoms to help our fellow man. So we do want to read some, there's a lot of good ideas on desire in notes on the Bhagavad Gita. This is how desire and will work together. Will is a pure, colorless force which is moved into action by desire. So as we said, so goes desire, so goes will. If desire does not give a direction, the will is motionless. And just as desire indicates, so the will proceeds to execute. So in regards to desire and the universe, the universal aspect, it is that whole idea of desire first arose in it. The Dhyan Shohans are the vehicles for the manifestation of the divine thought and will. But the coming forth of manifestation, the initial promptings for manifestation from the divine are cyclic in nature, and we really don't have any knowledge of what that whole prompting would be, except that we know that it is cyclical. So what do we do with this practically then, by knowing what desire and will are? Again, it's motive. And we're not to kill out action. We don't want to, you know, desire is not a bad thing. We don't want to kill it out. You know, we think it's in the Voice of the Silence talks about kill out all desire. But in reality, it's that lower idea of desire. We have to manage it. We have to keep those lower thoughts at bay so that will can function in an upward manner. And the whole purpose then would be to focus on higher ideals, to focus that desire for an upward life, upward ideas, so that the will, when it does go into action, will have a strong foundation from desire. And we'll just close with another reading from the notes. They say that the senses are great. The heart is greater than the senses, but intellect is greater than the heart, and that which is greater than an intellect is this passion or desire. Knowing that it is thus greater than the mind, strengthening thyself by thyself, do thou, O great armed one, slay this foe which assumes any form it will and is intractable. So it's a matter of controlling desire. It's not a matter of wiping it out, but keeping it, but knowing what it is we need to do, doing our duty, and doing it for the good of all. So we'll take your questions.
In the back?
What has been said, will is a universal power, like electricity is universal. It's not entirely a human principle. So we can't increase our will, but we can increase our access to it by increasing or strengthening our desires. So what specifically can we do to increase our desire, to increase the power of that principle?
So what can we do then to, we think the question is to keep our desire principle in a more positive, no.
Not positive, stronger.
Strong, oh, to make it stronger. How can we make it stronger? By working and being aware of it on a consistent basis. Because the more that we are aware that we are all spiritual beings and we are consistently looking at each other as spiritual beings, that we're all on this road together, and we think by meditating, being one-pointed, then and looking at everything that we do, as they talk about as above, so below, that being and that everything can be looked at as being a spiritual action, we think that that will help keep it strong.
And did you have a follow-up, or did you?
Well, if desire is a power or a force, wouldn't it be stronger if we had your desires, one overshadowing desire, rather than many different desires like we have now?
Yes, the will of spirit in action has produced everything that exists, but will gets confused with a multiplicity of desires. And if we make our desires for the good of all concerned, for not selfish or separative, then will has more, it has a wider berth, as it were, to work in. It being a universal power, not the domain of any individual. Yes?
As we just said, that we need to evaluate our desires. But I think we're told in something, well, we understand it, that as Buddha said, the greatest desire that we can manifest is compassion. And that's a little, well, it takes on many, many characteristics.
Right.
Now, by trying to develop that one desire, do we attract will to ourselves? Do we become but stronger, or that will is such a universal quality that when one desire is the highest that you can possibly imagine, does that strengthen the will?
Well, especially with the idea of compassion, if that is our one desire, it is all-encompassing. It can affect everything. So if one, we think if one would focus on compassion, then that would make that one focus, that one foundation, even stronger to affect a positive change in will.
Yes. Well, will is spirit in action, and we could look at it as like if an artery is blocked, and if it's once it's opened up, the blood can flow again. So, or a dam, if a dam is dismantled, then the water can flow again. And so we need to look at the blockages that we have, the sense of separateness, the sense of the personality, because we are individualities. We are one, we are part of one great whole, but we each have a personality, a vehicle that we're working through. And the personality, when it gets caught up in the lower desires, which is the kama manas, rather than the buddhi manas, we are in a sense purblind or partially blind to the reality. And the reality is that compassion is no attribute; it is the law of laws. We are here on a mission not just to raise up ourselves, but to raise up all life, all lives, because there is a steady stream of evolution, and the lower lives will in their turn become self-conscious and become men. Every atom will eventually become as a man.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, the be here now understanding of compassion is, we thought, was outlined by the Gita, by not looking for the results of your action, like by sacrificing everything up to the highest that we understand, and being single-minded and in the focus, be here now. And we think that's compassion in action.
Yeah, the idea, when we look at compassion in action, we can also call it doing one's duty and not looking for any results in it. And by doing one's duty as it comes, there's no question, I mean, that there is the result of compassion, because if we do it as it comes to us, we don't question why. It just is. So since we're not going to be looking for any results, we're not putting any qualifiers on the action that we're doing. So we can always look at, we think, that the idea of compassion can also be looked at as doing one's duty as it comes.
Yes.
But compassion actually is a power of the soul, just as will is a power of the soul. Compassion's not a desire. We may have the desire to become more compassionate, but that doesn't get us more compassion. That gives us perhaps access more so to compassion. You know, it's the ability to identify with an object in an effort to help it without, to be of service to it, to help it understand for itself. So when it comes to use of will through desire and making it more strong, the one thing that was said was to have fewer desires, which we get there through meditation, because it reprioritizes what's important to us. But the second way to do it, and the two are just as important, is to have a clear, concise mental picture of the object of the desire. And when we're talking about abstract things, that's a challenge. I mean, a clear, concise mental picture of what compassion is, that's a challenge. A clear, concise mental picture of what we can become, of the being that we can become, in order to more fully express compassion, that's more of a possibility. Our challenge is, you know, if we're going to manifest and contribute to manifesting, you know, universal brotherhood into the world, and that's our desire, one of the great challenges is, what does it look like? Because if you don't know what it looks like, and you can't see it, touch it, taste it, and smell it, at least in your mind, then it's kind of vague and fuzzy. And any desire that's vague and fuzzy has less of a chance of manifesting than those which you're very specific about headed toward. So what does it look like?
What does it look like? Well, it's colorless, it's tasteless, it's odorless.
Universal brotherhood.
What does it look like? Well, we are here to form the nucleus of universal brotherhood. All we see now in the world are our individual brotherhoods, but they're limited. We see them in church groups. We see them in the Masons. We see them in, we can see them in any group. There's any religion or philosophy. We can see it in academia. We can see it among, you know, the street sweepers. It needs to be universalized, though. We tend to identify with those who are like us. It's, in a sense, they're like a mirrors of us. And we need to desire to have higher desires, in a sense. And many people don't even have the desire. So we are here to spread, broadcast the teachings to, in a sense, shine a light on some of the situations in the world which are chaotic, that could be solved through brotherhood. But many people don't, unfortunately, they just raised in such a competitive atmosphere that they may be brotherly towards their brothers and sisters or their family or their cousins. It might not go beyond that at all. And then there are those that are completely selfish. Fortunately, they are rare, we hope.
And the idea of, you know, what does brotherhood look like with the philosophy? The philosophy gives us a whole different perspective about what is going on. And it was mentioned about how there's so many different brotherhoods. But if we can follow the philosophy, have those ideas in mind when we're looking at different groups, and we can see that there's a commonality. The first fundamental talks about how we all are sparks of the divine. And that is the foundation for universal brotherhood, that we are all divine in nature, but we are all on different paths. We are at different levels. And by looking at someone who maybe has done an awful act, we know that karmically there something brought him to that point. And by knowing the ideas of karma and reincarnation, it does take some of the anger that people can feel and make it less or make it more compassionate. But then at the same time, that person that did that act was brought to that point because of karma, but he still had the idea of free will in order to make the choice as to whether to pursue that act or not.
In the back.
Well, as little boys, we used to see the bunny papers and a bunch of children standing around, and one had an electric bulb lit over his head. They had been watching cowboys. Well, in a few minutes, they had a broomstick which represented the horses. And any little thing that they come over, they duplicated themselves with what was available, what they had seen or heard. So what about the idea of the power of imagination?
Well,
I've heard that term so much.
Well, the whole thing with imagination and desire, it is said that if your desires are weak, then your imagination will be weak as well. So the idea that was asked in the beginning about how do you make your desire stronger, then that would affect the whole idea of imagination. And if your imagination is strong, then the will then be able to follow through with that at a higher level then.
This gentleman here.
Thanks. Robert's here from All Four Gentlemen was a similar theme. I think they all touched on something important, is that this gentleman back here was saying that willpower is actually something that's like electrical or like understood, that anybody can tap into it, but the varying degree of how they can tap into it has to do with their understanding of desire. And he was suggesting that desire can be strengthened through virtue, the practice of virtues. And then that gentleman suggested that, the practice of those virtues, well, how does that depict our view of what this brother is, what we're doing? I think what's important to understand is that with imagination, our imagination can grow through our experiences and our altruistic involvement with people. But that isn't necessarily desire itself, like the gentleman said. That is actually that's the experience. And those experiences of different virtues and sometimes different trials and errors too actually strengthens our desire and our focus to what an experience is. We don't look at things in all gray areas anymore. We look at them and understand that all these different things are in different colors, and it's beautiful for that reason. But we understand because we experience them, not because we read about them in a book and not because someone else told us, but through experience. And those experiences aren't possible. Well, I understand what this gentleman said about how to practice virtue, how to do charity, how to be compassionate, how to, as the Gita said, perform deeds without expectation. Because every single day, if you believe in spirit, believe in God, and all that sort of thing, this nature, this thing is rolling on with its expectation for us to just live, you know? And we've in order for us to understand that, understand nature's pattern, we ourselves have to resonate with that pattern. And resonate with that pattern, I think, is the key to growing desire and being and having a more acute understanding of desire compared to being someone who's just absorbed in desire, like the difference between a mediator and a medium.
Yeah, there's a huge difference between mediatorship and mediumship. Mediumship being passive and mediatorship being active with all the principles. We need, just like two strings will vibrate in unison, there's nothing there to block it. There's no obstructions. There's no wall in between. We need to vibrate with the universal will, with charity and altruism and forgiveness and overlooking the faults of others, and saying, well, if I can see that fault in them, I must be in myself. There must be something. So to look inwardly, to look within, thou art Buddha. We are, that is our spiritual nature. We have the Buddha nature within us all. In the back.
Regarding the question is, how do we imagine, how we get a picture of imagination? Well, from what we're taught, that's impossible, because compassion is no attribute. It has no attribute. Right. So it would seem what we need to do is think of specifically, get a specific idea of what we can do to be more compassionate. For example, we may not be able to imagine compassion, but we can imagine ourselves being more charitable, speaking more charitably to another person, or not speaking critically of another person. And we can desire to do that. We can practice compassion in a very specific way and make that kind of desire the most strong in us. And then from that effort, other ideas come to us.
So the idea then is to kind of break down what compassion entails, and then those bits and pieces of what makes a person compassionate, then by desiring those ideas, then putting will into action, then would make us more compassionate.
So we... We suffer and we enjoy by turns, and this is the way we learn the spiritual will, through discipline and experience. So we know that when we do a good turn, we feel good. We feel good inside, and we should practice too to do a good turn in secret, as it were. We can do that. Would be like the opposite of being passive aggressive. Being passive aggressive is to do a bad turn in secret and hope that it gets to somebody, but it doesn't get back to you. But that's not how karma works. That's not how the law operates. We always get back what we give out in turn. But it is practice, but we suffer and enjoy. Sometimes we may not really know how to help. We try our best. We don't have the complete knowledge of the situation, and something could backfire. It could come back on us, and we could feel perhaps foolish or regretful. But we have to learn to forgive ourselves too. It's the motive. It's all in the motive. That's what really counts. Yes.
I was thinking about commanding your will, like the bow and arrow. So if you have less drag, less of these lower desires, then the force and the drive of that arrow will have more momentum and will be more impactful and be able to be more one-pointed, kind of.
Sure.
Yeah. That's basically what we've been trying to say, we think, is that the less drag, as was put, to focus our desires and become one-pointed with them, would definitely affect the will and make it stronger.
In the back.
The last contribution makes an important point that desire isn't the only way we can access will. We can also access it through prayer or will prayer. Right. So what is that will prayer, or that kind of prayer, that gives us access to will?
Well, the most perfect prayer is the Lord's Prayer, also called the Our Father, which is a will prayer. It's give us this day our daily bread, and to forgive those that trespass against us. It is the way the disciples ask, well, how should we pray? And that is the most perfect prayer, is to pray in private to our Father who is in heaven. So that's one example is of will prayer.
And that idea of that Father in heaven is our higher self. Because we won't pray to an outside God. We're, the will prayer is praying to our higher nature to help us to make those right decisions. And it again, it helps us to focus on one thing. And that's trying to be open to the promptings of that higher nature.
And thy kingdom come, thy will be done, is karma, it's action. And on earth as it is in heaven is as above, so below. So we are trying to mirror that perfect image of heaven and make heaven on earth. Make, you know, bliss. Bliss is a natural state. It's on this earth. Did you have a follow-up? Or
we thought that the idea behind will prayer was also that it is a command.
Right.
Suggested by the previous contribution that recognizing that we are one with, we are that higher self, that divine principle, we command it into action, which is a different kind of activity than just desiring to be more compassionate or helpful on this plane. It's actually reaching up to a higher and making a command rather than asking for help.
Right. Here's a quote. Man's twofold task is to awaken the will, strengthen it by use and conquest, make it the absolute ruler of the body, and parallel with this, to purify desire. Knowledge and will are the tools for the accomplishment of this purification.
So when we're in regards to the quote, so the knowledge is what we need for determining what our desires. We need to have the higher knowledge, proper knowledge of our desires so that will can be forced into action.
And it literally is, that's one of the that's one of the yogi powers, which would, if naturally developed, these are powers that are all latent within us. So these are what are in store for us if we purify our desires and strengthen our will. And one of them is just like the forget the exact Sanskrit name, but it's just like you're just impelled to act. You just know how to act and how to accomplish great deeds. And we see this in great beings like Jesus and Buddha, and even others like Gandhi and Martin Luther King. They knew that they had a mission, and they had great power and great foresight, and they were impelled to act. They just, not that it was easy for them, but they could see, they had clear vision. In a sense, they did have clairvoyance. We usually think of it in another respect, but they can clearly see the goal, they have the clear seeing, and then they have all these other powers, or some of them, that activate them to do great deeds.
And everything that was just said will also help us to develop our intuition, to help develop our Bodhi principle, which the more that becomes developed, that goes along with one's with the title of, what is it, Learning the Tools for Spiritual Evolution. So this is one of the ways that we can develop those tools.
And it's through the will prayer, the meditation, the concentration. It's centering the mind. It's cutting through all that. It's going in within oneself and connecting with one's higher self and just burning off all the dross that we are bombarded with every day. Yes?
Well, will and desire in action, the highest understanding of that is compassion, is universal brotherhood. Right. But that is a desire. Desire to be in cooperation with the rest of nature. As we are told that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. Compassion right. is a fact in the human kingdom. It's just that we have no imagination. We have, I think what was said before, we watch and we identify with it. So all these desires, we just identify with them, that there are. We need to identify with the compassion. We need to, you know, develop that feeling in us. Even though mind is superior to the heart, we have to have a heart. And once our heart is developed, our mind can develop.
Right. Yeah, that is the whole idea with universal brotherhood. Of being a fact in nature, that can be, when we're looking at the idea of compassion, it is a focus that can be made. It's a huge focus, but we can do little bits of it at a time. And we've spoken about it, little things that we can do in our lives, just being gracious to a waitress or a waiter, you know, smiling at somebody, you know, a cashier, just doing little things, we can be more focused in looking at others and seeing what they're going through. We can tell by looking at somebody's face out on the street or even standing next to somebody waiting for the light to change, and you can tell that somebody's having a bad day just smiling. And just being aware that other people, that we're all spiritual beings, and that people out there are going through rough times.
We have in the back, we have time for one quick one.
We are certainly grateful to our parents and some of our older ancestors for their imagination and their desire. Produced our present situation. So we're grateful and we're humble too, because most of the progress that we make in these days, we owe it to the imagination of our forebears, our parents, our ancestors, and those that came before us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So our meeting is over, and I want to thank everyone for coming.